स्मरान्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनश्रवकया चक्षुर्मिलितान्येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टम् स्थापितम् येन भूतले स्वयम् रूपकदामयम् ददाति स्वापरन्तिकम् वन्देऽहम् श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपरकमलम् श्रीगुरुम् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपम् सागजातम् सागनाघनाथम् वितन्तम् सजीवम् साधयितम् सावधूतम् परिजनासहितम् कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधाकृष्णपरम् सागनालविता श्रीविशाखण्डितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणासिन्धु दीनबान्धो जगत्प्रते गोपेश गोपिकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गे राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी विश्ववाणिसृतदेवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये पांशकौपत्तरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे We're going to look tonight at chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 4 is called Transcendental Knowledge. And we're going to check out text number 7 on page 226. We'll be talking about some things surprising and some things not so surprising. Don't mind if you get challenged a bit in your conventional modes of thinking. I'm sure you're all fans of that kind of thing anyway. Everybody likes to snap out of their, you know, ruts. At least for an hour or so anyway. So, Dharma. The word becoming increasingly used these days. What does it mean?
Righteous activity.
Righteous activity. Anyone else?
Religion.
Anyone else?
Halfway.
Here again.
What about someone's natural occupation?
Someone's natural occupation. Anyone else? Either?
Spiritual pathway,
right activity,
duty.
Spiritual pathway, right activity, duty, and all that sort of a thing. Okay. Dharma has two uses. There's the preliminary understanding of Dharma, and then there's the essential understanding. Now, some of you have said some interesting things, religion, righteous activity. But what is righteous activity?
Doing the best thing that we need to do.
Doing the best thing that we need to do. Like playing tennis in the best kind of way.
Mm.
Well, we'll stick to your first favorite. It's more interesting. We'll hold it to your first favorite. So I mentioned playing tennis. And she said, oh, that's your dharma. Do it to the best of your ability. Now, can I always play tennis?
Not when you're really old.
Is that
what you mean?
No, I'm
not
used
to
it. You can't let her talk.
No, you can't play all the time.
Not when I'm old?
No.
And not when I'm really young also, right?
Yes.
And not when I sleep either, right?
Yes.
In fact, it seems like there's a lot of hours during the day where I can't do my dharma, right? For playing tennis, right? So what kind of dharma is that if I can only do it? You know, a portion of my life and a portion of the day.
Not the
job, not the trigger. Alright. Can you give me a more expanded understanding?
So do you have your spiritual path?
My spiritual path. Okay. Which starts where and leads to where?
It's just continuously. From the beginning to the end.
Okay, but you can't tell me where it began. Can you tell me where it might end?
I don't know where it is because I'm not aware of that.
Now, if we're going to try to understand dharma as path, you said a pathway, didn't you? It probably would help to know where the path's going. I mean, generally when you say path, it means there's a destination in mind.
The reading some things in the book.
No, that would get trouble again. No, come on. You can speculate for a while.
Well, I talk about the heavenly sanity here, but I believe it's going a lot further than that.
You mentioned pathway? Pathway, I mean, from where to where?
Pathway to being conscious of God, as far as I'm going to talk about that.
Conscious of God. Any nutshell definition of that?
Nutshell definition of God.
Right.
The most purest place I can think of.
Most purest place.
Purest feeling.
Purest feeling you can think of. And here's an example. When you're bungee jumping and you're soaring through the air.
Somewhere where I'm not aware of myself, of my ego.
Somewhere where you are not aware of yourself. Yes.
A lot of ways, a lot of quotes in Dharma is very similar to like Chairman Mao's little red book. In fact, that's he sort of gave out the little red book and said, right, if you sort of adhere to this, and this is how you become a good communist. I sort of see Dharma in a very similar way, as if imagine God being like Chairman Mao, giving out this little red book, saying, you follow like this, and this is how you get to me.
That's very close to the Vedic original definition of the term. But I mean, is that you're equated with kind of Chairman Mao, so is this activity of giving out a book and saying this is what you do, is that good or bad?
Well, you know, it's not, it's neither one or the other, good or bad. I think in the Chairman Mao, that's just an instance of someone actually giving out the code of conduct to become a certain pure principle, as Chairman Mao saw, a pure communist. But obviously, God would have the same sort of thinking that, you know, obviously you can't be a little bit, in the way you want you to be, you have to be all the way. If you sort of see what I'm saying. And it's like, Dharma is almost similar, you know, follow this is the sort of principle that I lay out. And if you adapt it and follow it and become it, like Chairman Mao wanted the promise, not just follow a book, but become like the book itself almost. Each little person was a part of the book.
Is that good or bad? I mean, alright. You don't want to give any judgment.
Well, and that's in the context.
Something you can handle. It's something you can handle. I'll put it that way.
Yes, and so I would see that as good. Not necessarily the comments part of things, but not the comments part. I'm talking about Dharma side of things. I don't see anything wrong in that, because at the end of the day, you know, people cannot be like God just from their own thoughts. They do need to know what they're trying to aim for and how to become like it.
Any comments on that? In other words, according to what you feel you should do, you I couldn't adopt that theme more, because it's a very popular theme, what she's saying.
Yeah.
But you say it again, just so everybody can, that you kind of feel that there's no need of any kind of book coming, there's no need of God laying a trip on us.
No, I don't think
it's just like kind of
need to hand out about what you need to do and what you don't need to do, because
it kind of just comes out of you naturally.
That's something that you need to develop for yourself.
And can you point to any examples of people who are developing that within themselves, but just on their own? So that means like, let's say, well, anybody could be doing it, you just don't know, right?
Yeah, I don't know about, yeah.
And they're all kind of doing it in their own way, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a private thing.
Yeah.
And no one really knows for sure where anybody's at.
I don't really know. I don't
know. Now, this is an interesting point. What is Dharma, point number one? The actual Vedic definition, the Sanskrit term, means, as this gentleman here was saying, injunction, the law is laid down. Of course, sometimes we don't feel comfortable about that. We don't like some higher entity or higher whatever laying down the law on us. But then we take your point of view. That means if we are the ones who we're deciding what is what, then actually we're laying down the law. Now somebody's got to do it. So the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita is to convince you that you have to find the perfect source and take Dharma from there. Otherwise, even though we are very tiny, limited, and imperfect, we'll end up in that capacity of laying down the law. And the Bhagavad Gita will try to get you to see, look where that's brought you.
But that, other people's, this law is a word, guidelines, but about other people's ways of receiving knowledge through their, like from higher sources, that allow them to have a way of living that is good, but they have, the laws would be different.
So, the whole point of tonight's discussion, and that's why we're focusing on this word Dharma, everyone wants to be good most of the time, except Friday night or Saturday night. Everyone wants to be righteous, but who decides what all that stuff is? Yeah. Who's the ultimate authority on what's good and righteous? Oh, we can have a lot of confusion in this room. just amongst the 15 or so people here, each one of you has your own vision of what is righteous and what is good. So, Bhagavad Gita is trying to teach you to find out the actual authority. Otherwise, I'll say this, you'll say that, this is good, no, that's good. Now, who will decide? In order to decide what Dharma is, what the ultimate good is, what the standard is, we have to be able to see the whole picture. Now, who here can see all of infinity? But in order to decide what is Dharma, what is the standard, you have to be able to see infinity. Then you'll know what's the best thing in all circumstances. Now, who here can do that? Anyone? Just like, let's see, some of you here have children? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now suppose, let's say I was your five-year-old child. So I say to you, you know, I know what's good for me. I'm never going to school. Just look, I gotta figure it out. I'm 5 years old. I wanna play all day. I don't want to go to school. What's the point? Just, you know, marching up to school in the morning, coming back in the evening, wasting all the day during the sunlight hours. Just want to play. Be natural. Spontaneous. Act out my heart, you know, my intuition. I don't want to go to school. Now, what would you say? Why? Why?
I'm older and more than you are.
So basically what you're telling me then is you have wider knowledge of all the circumstances. You're telling me I may not be able to see what I want to do 10 years later when I'm 15 years old. I won't understand the ramifications of the choice I'm trying to make at 5 not to go to school, okay? But you see the whole picture. So therefore you're laying down the law, right? Does anybody disagree with that? Everybody would agree with it. Why? Why do you agree with it? But you know, you wouldn't agree with anything she said just because I'm her child. You're agreeing with her because why is it logical?
Because she can see and she does know more than me.
So therefore, what you all are doing, whether you recognize it or not, implicitly, you're siding with her and not me, the five-year-old kid, because you say she sees more. She knows more. Okay. Therefore, she can lay down the law. She can lay down the quote-unquote Dharma in the house. Now, what about adults? How does an adult decide what to do and what not to do? Suppose you wanted to, here's a controversial one. Suppose June decided that life is too much suffering, her body's aching too much, and she wants to voluntarily end her life. Okay, it's a controversial one. Now, what are we supposed to say? How will you advise her? She decided she's got terminal cancer, doesn't want to go through all the suffering of being eaten by tumors and having her body wasted by tumors. She just says, I want to skip all that. I'll just exit my own way voluntarily. Now, what would you say to her?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
Because that's the way she feels.
Okay. That's the way she feels about it. Anyone else? I know it's a controversial one, so everyone's afraid to say something about this. The only thing worse I can say is probably abortion, you know? Take an example of someone considering an abortion. Anyway, we'll stick with this one. What would you say?
I thought so.
You're trying to be righteous.
Yeah.
If you could present the question again, because I only got the last sentence.
It's just like you sound out of it. So, you won't be able to catch on this one because it's part of a whole, that's the way to the next,
pretty quick to catch up.
Pick up. She doesn't want to go through the whole process of dying from cancer. She wants to voluntarily exit now. Now, how will you advise her? He said, go for it back there.
I've known people who've actually died and it's been more of a... I guess the pain for them wasn't physical, it was more, they were quite spiritually confused or mentally confused, and that was a different pain, and it even ends up being quite a physical pain for them. So they, I try to stop them.
You try to stop her?
Well,
why?
Well, if you were so close to me, I don't know, I guess it's a natural thing for me to try and stop someone to do that or try and help.
Why?
I guess if you've got cancer, you're going to die.
She doesn't want to go through all the pain of having the body eaten by tumors. Why are you stopping her?
Well, maybe I will stop her.
Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I will stop her.
Why?
Because I think committing suicide is wrong.
Why?
You should wait for your destiny. You should wait until death comes whenever you're ready for
it. But she says if she's going to go, she's going to go. So, you know, why be racked with pain? Why not just, you know?
You don't have the right to take your own life.
Why not? Who says? Who says? You say.
Yeah, I say so.
It's her body. What would you do? What would you say?
That's what I get to go for this one time.
Oh, he's fatalist here.
Yeah.
What would you say? Yeah.
I think everybody's entitled to do exactly what they want when it comes to exiting this place. If they don't want to go through that pain, no one else has got the right to say, sorry, you've got to go through that pain. It's part of your fate. You have all the right to say that. That person is the only person that can make that decision.
Alright. Anyone else? What would you say? Okay.
I'm reasonably quick at catching on. So my understanding is that your life is a moment-by-moment decision of who you want to be. If you want to transcend this earthly experience, then it's your free choice to do it. So I'll open my heart and give them all my blessings and allow them to do what they choose to do.
Alright. You're shaking your head saying no. Why?
I thought you didn't mind if you're suspicious and that's the right thing.
That's easy for you to say, but you don't have the tumors eating out your brain and your stomach, you know? Have you ever seen somebody die of cancer?
Yes.
Without drugs. Or with drugs, it's a mess.
Yes, but there are drugs here. I mean,
they're
drugs available to help manage the pain.
Yeah, that's a good doctor to manage the pain.
Yeah, but I think if you escape from the pain now, you'd be born the next life in pain again.
You think, huh? You think?
You have to go through it.
You think? Who says?
Me. I say so.
Alright, let's go back to our previous example. I'm 5 years old. I don't want to go to school. The daytime hours are the best time for playing. Be out, you know, in the forest, in the parks, you know, in the mountains, just cavorting, you know, fresh air. Mother always said fresh air is good for you. Sunlight. Why should I go enter into some tomb-like school building and sit down at the table and chair, desk and chair all day long? My heart tells me, be playful. Why do I have to wait till I'm your age to find my inner child? 30, well, you know, totally worn out, you're going to ask me to find my inner child. So, but you say, and you know better, right? You see the whole picture. You see how these two things go together? The older person who is dying of cancer and wants to, is considering ending their life to avoid the pain, and the child doesn't want to go to school? Anyone see how these two things are correlated? The child is supposed to submit. I'm supposed to submit to her because she sees more than me. Now, the person who's thinking of ending their life is supposed to submit to you. For what reason? So, do you see more? Well then, you have to be backed by some source of information that's greater. Therefore, just like the mother tells the child, I see more, you gotta go to school. Similarly, you have to be able to point to some superior source of knowledge which says, never mind what you feel like now, there's a wider reality that you're not aware of, so you can't do this. Do you get that part? I'm a 5-year-old. I gotta go to school because she's telling me she sees the big picture. I don't. I just see that, you know, playing all day is fun. And the school building is like a tomb. 15 years from now, I don't know what I'm gonna be doing. What does it matter? The point is to be a child now. She says no. Then, the other example. She's 70. She's got terminal cancer. All she sees is pain, I don't want this pain, and I don't know anything about any afterlife, whatever, whether it's there or not, I just want to get rid of this pain. If there is an afterlife, well, I'll be after. If not, I won't. So the only way you can stop her is if you, like the mother talking to the school child, you can say, there's superior knowledge you're not aware of. You don't see the whole picture. In other words, if you're actually, when you talk about dharma, righteousness, you have to have access to the view of infinity, to see every possible situation so that you can know what the best thing to do is in every situation. Now, does anyone here have access to infinity? Knowledge of all different circumstances so you can come out with the little red book. Is anyone here? Maybe you. Anyway. So therefore, according to the Vedic standard, you cannot decide what Dharma is. Disqualified. You can't decide what righteousness is. Disqualified. Why? Who can say why?
Because you can't see everything.
Right. You can't see everything. You cannot see what's good for every living entity in every circumstance. We can't even do that for human beings, let's speak of all species of life. Therefore, the whole basis of Bhagavad Gita is you take your information, how to act, from the source of everything, then you've got everything covered. And the converse is also true. Don't take your information from any source that is not infinite, otherwise you may be tripped up somewhere because there'll be some blind spot. So Dharma, what is Dharma? Dharma means the codes, the procedures, the pathways given by the supreme source of everything. If we're not infinite, if we are not the cause of all causes, the source of all matter and spirit, we cannot come out with Dharma. That is the basic principle of Bhagavad Gita. Now, of course, Katie, she was bringing up a good point. Even though we have limited capacity, it's kind of nice to think we can lay down the law, right?
Yeah.
Well, I decide what I want to do. I feel like doing this, I do it. If I don't, I don't. No one has a monopoly on the truth. You just got to find out what's best for you and make a go at it as best you can. But when you think about it, this is very proud, isn't it? What you're saying is that I have the ability to actually see, although I'm limited and tiny, with imperfect senses, I actually have the ability to chart a course through so much unknown territory. Suppose, let's say, have you been to Japan before? Alright. Suppose you're going to Japan. You've never been there before. Now, I've been there before. Now, I say to you, oh, you're going to Japan. Well, let me give you some advice. What would you say? No, you would be. That's what you really say. That's what you really say. Thanks, but no thanks. I mean, I'm just going to kind of, go about it my own way. And, however I get there, and I'm sure that, I'll kind of recognize what to do when the situation comes upon me. You don't say that. But isn't that our approach to life? Don't try to lay any kind of heavy book, little red book, as he says, on me. Don't give me any Lonely Planet travel guide book. I know what I'm doing, and even if I don't, so what?
No,
Now, okay, so it's up to you, right? Now suppose you landed, you do get on the airplane to Japan, you get off the plane in Tokyo, you go up to the immigration counter, and they'll ask you some questions. What hotel are you? Where are you going to live? Where are you staying at? It's on the immigration form. Some countries, they don't care. You put down whatever you like. In Japan, they check it out. So where are you going to stay? Now suppose you decide, well, I just don't feel like filling out that form. What happens? What do they do? No, they just say, step inside this room until it has a return flight to Auckland. And what would you say? I don't feel like going back to Auckland.
It's not a feeling.
Well, you are.
Why is this then?
No, it's a feeling. You were right. You didn't feel like giving them the information they wanted. You considered it. And you even told them. Well,
I should say, you know the repercussions of your decision.
You know the repercussions of your decision.
I'm sure that if they said to you, you have to fill out this form, not can you please, you realize you can't fill out that form.
But suppose it's just that their demand didn't resonate with your inner heart. No. You just, as you said before, someone can suggest something to you, they can give you some advice, and you may follow or not. So they said, look, we want a bona fide address on that visa form, entry form, and you just said, well, I appreciate you saying that, and don't worry, I really accept your way of doing things, but right now I just don't feel like it.
No,
And you say, and speaking realistically, you say you would actually put down a good address, right? If you wanted to go to Japan, right?
Yeah,
I'd
Why? Because I want to travel the country.
And you know that if you don't,
I'm not going to travel.
All right. So once again, your activity is based on your desire and knowledge of the wider circumstances. Now, do you have that kind of knowledge about everything you do in life? No. So you all hear that? She's saying, we don't have that kind of knowledge about everything we do in life. But still, everybody's acting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't this kind of risky? We don't see the whole situation. We don't have the capacity to see every possible ramification to our actions, yet we're all busy acting. Is there anyone here who doesn't act? So what are we going to do about this? Any suggestions? You see, she's saying, I know I have to sign my sign an address on that entry form into Japan, otherwise I'm not getting into the country. So you're going to submit to that. But is that the only thing in life you're submitting to? No. Bhagavad Gita will teach you that Dharma means the laws and regulating principles coming from the Supreme, and you do it. You can choose, and just like you said, if you choose not to, there's a reaction. Now, we'll accept injunction, we'll accept regulation from a government, from our boss, at our job, but we just don't like to accept the fact that there is a government over our whole existence and their laws. We really don't like that. You know what I mean? Now, why is that? Anyone have some analysis of why that's stuck? What do you think? Like a psych, you know what I mean? Some kind of psychological aversion. Maybe it's some kind of like, well, you go on, you say.
Well, that's not sure. Is that imbalance? Wanting to rule?
Wanting to rule. It's interesting. You touched on the same point. We don't mind ruling, but we don't like to be ruled. You ever notice that? We don't mind ruling the roost, but we don't want anyone ruling us. Isn't this amazing? Anyone else have any insight into why we have this psychological aversion to accepting any kind of regulation, overall regulation in our life? Some people don't believe there's any, but those same people, they submit to the government, right? They'll sign an address for their entry form into Japan, right? So that's a contradiction. That means they do accept. Like the kid who doesn't want to go to school because he can't see what the benefit is. He doesn't accept that there's any law saying he has to go to school or at least do homeschooling or something. He doesn't accept it. So from the Vedic point of view, from the standpoint of Bhagavad Gita, not accepting that there is universal control and regulation is childish. It's like a little kid saying, I'm not going to school, I'm not doing homeschooling, there'll be no problem, I feel this way. We might be controlled and ruled. Perhaps it's like some kind of negativity brought about by our rebellion against some kind of Christian upbringing or something. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt do that, and sin and all that kind of thing. We just, it's like, perhaps once we get that out of the way, we kind of have felt the sense of, what? What?
Freedom.
Anyone else? What do you feel when you rise above all that stuff, all that conditioning? You know, thou shalt do this, thou shalt not do that. The guilt.
Oh, I made a sin.
What do you feel when you get beyond all that stuff?
You feel in control.
You feel in control. Can you explain that more?
Free to do whatever you want.
Free to do whatever you want. Can you give us an example?
Like travel around the world. Maybe go to a certain university.
Are you free to go to whatever university you want in New Zealand?
No, in New Zealand.
What did you say? Are you free to go to any country you want in this world?
No, I don't.
What are you free to do?
I'm free to buy a hammer.
You're free to buy, oh, really? And what do you need to buy with it?
Oh, money.
How do you get the money?
Well, usually you have a little bit of money.
How do you get the money? Are you free to have money?
No.
It just pops into your pocket freely?
No, you have to work for it.
See, you gotta work by going to the dole office, or you gotta go to a job. The dole office is also work, right? And you better get a job.
Oh, I'm trying.
You better get a job. We're gonna kick you off.
Oh, I just can't get a job. I went to so many interviews.
You better get a job too. You've been on the dole for 10 years. Doesn't that work? So it'll be like, in Australia, they make you keep a logbook, and you have to record all your attempts to get a job. Otherwise, they cut you off. No, they'll probably do that here soon. So, let's work. All right, so how does the money appear in your pocket to buy a hamburger?
You have to work for it.
You have to work for it, you say, huh?
Yeah.
You have to work for it. Where's the freedom? And what happens when you eat the hamburger? Are you free to react physiologically to it, however you like?
No.
What happens?
You're not in control of that.
Right. Can you say to your digestive system, digest this hamburger in quick time like it was vegetables? Can you tell that to your digestive tract?
No.
No. No. Your digestive tract will take its usual long time to digest the meat. So, please point out the freedom. Point out the freedom in your life.
No, maybe I should just do it. This is the exact.
No. You said rightly, it's fun to be free.
Yeah.
Where's the freedom?
You feel in control.
That's a very good point. You feel in control.
Yeah, but you're not.
And how do you feel in control?
You feel free to make your own decisions.
Like what? Will it be Tom tonight or will it be Harry? What do you mean?
To go left or right.
But what happens when you go left and what happens when you go right?
Well, how do you
hear that? Okay, let's go back to my other example. Whether it's Tom or Harry. Now, where's the freedom in that? The freedom is, it won't be this one, it'll be that one. You think that's freedom, huh?
I don't.
Why?
Because you don't have all the opportunities that there are. You only have two.
Oh, so real freedom would be which one of the million guys is on this? That's real freedom, huh? According to Bhagavad Gita, however, you're missing how you're enslaved. What is binding you? Let's say you could choose between the half million or whatever guys in Auckland. How is that not freedom? How are you bound? Who can see? Yes.
Did you get to choose? Because we're the opposite?
No, no.
It's not fair.
No. What's pushing you in that direction? Whether it's just Tom or Harry or a choice between a half million, what's pushing you to have that need?
Your senses.
Ah, so where's the freedom? You're under control of your senses. You're enslaved by desire. Something's beating inside you. You need someone. You want someone. Now whether it's this one or that one, or one out of a million, or 100 out of a million, you're still enslaved to something. So where's the freedom? So once again, let's get back to our point. We like to feel that we're in control, but actually, any sane person can see we're not in control. Still, however, we have this aversion to taking law from a superior source. And according to Bhagavad Gita, that is our problem in material existence. We don't see the whole picture, yet we're so eager to act in a way that she wouldn't let her 5-year-old kid act. We're eager to do that, though. So the 5-year-old kid, you say, you don't see the whole picture. But an adult, you won't say that to. I'm 60 years old, I want to end my life because I don't want to go through the pain of cancer. Oh, that's all right, whatever you decide. Why don't we say to the adult, you don't see the whole picture? Obviously, the best thing to do is to try to get knowledge from the source of everything. Whether or not that's possible, that's another thing. But at least we should have that in our mind, that's the best thing to do if it is possible. Does anybody disagree with that? Okay. So if you've got that much understanding, then you can get along with Bhagavad Gita. You can just hang it on that level. You can play ball. You can deal with it. Fair enough? Okay. Let's read text 7. We're going to read the purport too. We usually don't do this right away, but I want to experiment tonight. We're going to read the translation and purport. I know there's going to be a lot in the purport that we don't understand, but I just want to see what the reactions are. Remember what we are discussing about Dharma. According to the original Vedic use of the word, Dharma means the path laid down by the Supreme. That means no human being can manufacture Dharma. Only the Supreme, the source of everything, can manufacture Dharma. Okay, I'll read the Sanskrit, yeah? Yada yada hi dharmasya gane bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam shijanyam. Can I read that translation?
Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, descendants of
Bharata alright, who has a clear voice, loud clear voice for reading the purport? Anyone? You can read?
I'm calling
you. You can read? Anyone? You can read? Gita? Okay, here we go. Yes!
I don't know
the English. You just read the English, I'll read the Sanskrit. second.
The word
Sridhani.
It's a limited hearing. The Dhamma cannot be used in the sense of creation, because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body, so all of the forms are eternally existent. Therefore, Sridhami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely at the end of the of the 28th millennium of the 7th Monday, one day of Brahma, he had no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations. He shall be completely free to act in many ways as his will. He therefore appeared by his own will whenever there is the dominance of and the disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas and are an indiscrepancy in the nature of Only the Lord can manufacture a system of solutions. The Vedas are also accepted as the vision spoken by the Lord himself to Brahma from a finished heart. Therefore, the principles of Dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Dharmaṁ kṣāksya bhagavat pranītam.
These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord. And the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto him only, and nothing more. The both principles push one towards complete surrender unto him. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demonic, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam, we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna, who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the teachings of the authority of the Vedas. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demonic tendency still took the animal sacrifice without respect to the Vedic principles. Lord Buddha didn't stop this nonsense and establish the Vedic principle of non-violence. Therefore, each and every
avatar
or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission, and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless he is referred to by the scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only on Indian soil. He can manifest himself anywhere and everywhere, and whenever he desires to appear. In each and every incarnation, he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by particular people under the particular circumstances. But the mission is the same, to lead people to God, consciousness and obedience to the principles of the religion. Sometimes he descends personally, and sometimes he sends his bonus representatives in the form of his sons and all servants, all the staff and sons of Christ to him. The principles of the
religion. Okay, we can start there. Alright. So, we're getting further elucidation of the basic point where Dharma comes from. But that brings us to, we can actually go to point four on the list. Can the Supreme come here? In this verse, this is Krishna speaking, by the way. Krishna speaking in Bhagavad Gita. He's saying, whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice, oh, descendant of Bharata, that's another name for Arjuna, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Now, we've got to decide, is it possible for the Supreme, if there is a Supreme, to come here? The whole Bhagavad Gita is based on the fact that the Supreme can come and reinvigorate the law or remind people what Dharma is. But are we going to accept that? Maybe it's just some kind of like folklore, mythology, or somebody's trip. like ancient dogma books. What do you say? Is it possible or?
Yes, it's possible.
Likely?
I feel so.
And let's say you happen to how should I say? Be aware of the descent of the Supreme. Would you adjust yourself, or you would just say, well done, very good,
but I don't think that the choice
would
matter, because we'd be affected by the seeing so much.
Anyone else?
Huh? How attached you are to I think my Supreme will come at a time when I need to carry on the word at a time where perhaps people had lost their faith and there was nobody left to preach or tell more of what the Supreme is. And that probably I don't think would necessarily happen in our lifetime.
Why?
Because I think that religion of all religions is still quite strong and still quite spoken. People are willing and feel what they feel and they're quite willing to speak.
Now, she brings up a very interesting point as usual. You see, in Bhagavad Gita, there is no slack given for religious belief. You get no points in Bhagavad Gita for religious belief. You don't find a single text or verse in this book where Krishna says, just believe in me. After that, what might that indicate? Yet on the other hand, we've been discussing Dharma, law, cosmic law, universal law. The fact that nowhere in the Gita does Krishna say, just believe in me, indicates that Dharma, of which religion is not a good equivalent of Dharma, Dharma means nothing to do with belief. In other words, I may believe one way, you may believe another way, but things are happening. We're under control. Our actions are bringing about reactions. I may believe this, you may believe that, but things are happening. So Dharma is dealing with what's happening regardless of the mental content you have in your consciousness. You may be thinking this, that, whatever. Just like we were discussing with this lady here. She said, well, it's fine to feel you're in control, freedom. But then she concluded that it's just a mental hallucination because actually we're not in control, we're under control. So that's the point. We may believe this, we may feel that, but Dharma means what's happening. Just look at your body. How many of you ask to get old? It's happening. How many of you ask that when you were 12 years old, the hormones in your body would change? Any of you remember asking for that? When you were 10, the opposite sex, the young boys or girls in your neighborhood, they were just, you know, you never worried about them. When you were 12 or 13, all of a sudden. Now who remembers asking for that? When you were 9, you weren't chasing boys, right? have a few years, right? And fresh start, right?
Yes.
Why? Did you ask for that? Maybe in your mind you believe that it shouldn't happen. Still, the hormones bubble anyway, right? So this is the point of Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't have anything to do with belief. I give the example here so many times. You've heard it. I'm sure some of you've heard it. I've just flown in from New York. And my intuition tells me that the way to really enjoy New Zealand is to drive on the right-hand side of the road.
I know, it's the best thing.
The right-hand side of the road is where it's at. My intuition tells me this. And what would you think?
You wouldn't have to say anything. You'd soon find out.
Oh, yeah, it's my path.
Yeah, you wouldn't get a very long path.
Hopefully, I might meet you, you know? Face to face. We could have a relationship, you know? Head on. You wouldn't mind, right?
As long as I'm driving a bus.
So, but you don't understand. You know, the right-hand side of the road, really, I just know it's best. Says who?
It's when you go out and try.
I get a real adrenaline rush when I do it. Is it the main thing, what I believe? You know, it's like what feels right for me. You understand that, yeah? So if I meet you head on, you'll understand I'm just doing what feels right for me. So you won't mind, correct? You won't mind?
I have no choice if I meet you on.
But you won't mind. In your dying breath, you'll just say, as long as you did what you believed. Right? Now you shouldn't judge. Don't make judgments. Wouldn't you appreciate that I was really acting according to what I believed? Why not? Nugget, wouldn't you give me that appreciation? your sister is here. Wouldn't you give me that appreciation?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? What says who?
Well, only your experience. Your experience will show you that you misguided.
Well, I don't mind, you know. It's the only way I could meet you head on, you know. We have a relationship, you know. What's wrong? I know you feel that way, but at the same time, I really understand that you want me to do what I think is best. That you didn't mind when I met you head on.
I did mind.
No, you were so loving. That you actually, you allowed that situation. You were so loving that you didn't mind me crashing into you head on because you knew that. So it was unconditional love. Yes. Yeah, right? Unconditional love. Greater love have no lady than to allow someone to smash into her head on so that person could experience their beliefs. Right? Yeah, you don't seem to get that. So similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, beliefs aren't accepted. Bhagavad Gita simply deals with what is the supreme source of everything? How to establish our connection to the supreme source of everything? and how to live by the laws of the Supreme. Is that fair enough? Otherwise, we're going to have all these problems. I think it's good to drive on the right-hand side of the road and meet you head-on. You say no. We have a government in New Zealand that sorts these things out. But what are the powers of the government leader? Can they see into every situation? No. For example, the number two source of income in the country here is through animal slaughter. Now, it seems to bring in a good amount of cash. So, and to stop it, probably a lot of people go out of work, it seems. So, probably the animals they like to be slaughtered, right? I mean, that's what animals are for. You see, maybe at butcher shops, you see like a face of a happy cow, you know, happy pig, you know, that's what they're created for. The Bible says, man was given dominion over all the creatures. That means you gobble them up. Actually, anyone with common sense knows that dominion means stewardship. You take care of them. The point is, if you approach Bhagavad Gita in this way, let me find out if Krishna fulfills his qualification. Now, if someone says, I am the Supreme, and this is the process by which you can verify that, isn't that fair enough? Where's the dogma? Where's the trick that's being laid on you? What do you think? No. You may believe or not believe, but, for example, if I say, I live in New York, and here's the process whereby you can come to New York and see me. Isn't that fair enough? Would I be giving you dogma if I said that? June, I live in New York. New York exists. I'm there. If you want to find it out for sure, if you want to come to me, this is how you get a ticket. You can go in this way. Is that being dogmatic? So Krishna is doing the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. He's saying, I am the source of everything. All material and spiritual energies emanate from me. If you want to verify this, here's the process. Isn't that fair enough? What would you say?
Well,
let's go back to the New York example. I'm from New York.
Yeah.
I say, do you want to come and see me in New York? Here's the way. You can verify that I live in New York. These are the means to do it.
Well, on my side, is that, because that's supposing, that very suggestion is supposing that it's more important for me to come to you than you to come to me. By that very suggestion. So therefore there has to be an acceptance in that already that you're obviously more important than I am. So therefore there has to be a certain amount of that built in this. It's not just, I am, and if you want to see me, come follow. So actually follow in the first place, there has to be a sort of acceptance that, well, you're worth getting to in the first place.
Similarly, in an ordinary example, you have to have some desire to go to New York. So Bhagavad Gita will also give you information how that is so, as you say. No one here will say they're the source of everything. No one here will say that they're the source of all matter and spirit. Will anyone here say that? Alright, so we know that's not our position. So if someone else can say that is my position and this is the way you can verify that, I mean, probably you'd say, well, but anyway, you sound like a tall claim, but you say you're giving the process how I can verify it, so why not? So that's all Krishna is doing in Bhagavad Gita. Authoritatively, yes, explaining. and giving you the process how you can verify. Only that kind of power can lay down Dharma. We can't do it ourselves. Now, implicit in our psychological reaction, and perhaps you might recognize, is some kind of fear that following Dharma cuts down on all the fun. You know what I mean? Right? Yes? Well, now why is that? We kind of have a feeling, right, that to just kind of be fancy free, that's where you get all the fun, right? Yes? No?
No.
I mean, doesn't it seem like, just like Bhagavad Gita has a lot of verses about sense control, disciplining your mind, that seems to take away all the fun out of life, doesn't it?
You're used to thinking, you're used to going out and drinking and doing all those sorts of things, so to you that's fun. And so if it was taken away from you, then you might not think it's fun.
Right. So what you're saying is that the living entity is naturally pleasure seeking.
Could have been conditioned to be. Mm-hmm. From the moment we are born, or if you are born into a family that is like that, then you absorb your environment, and therefore you become your environment.
Do you know anyone who's not pleasure seeking?
It seems what pleasure is.
But that's all right. But do you know anyone who's not pleasure seeking?
No. Mm-hmm.
If you're an expert, you can even see it in the animals and the trees and the plants. When the trees move towards the sun, that's their pleasure. If you have a dog that barks at strangers, do you ever notice a dog that barks at strangers? They like doing that. Have you noticed that? They really like it. They get a good feeling inside. You notice that? Anyone have a dog here? Don't they like it? They really just get into it. That's their pleasure. Now you give them a nice piece of meat, and they just pleasure. So all living entities are pleasure seeking. So Bhagavad Gita will teach you, and Krishna says, "I, the Supreme, appear in this temporary material world to show you the best way to get pleasure." But when we hear Dharma, we just, the law of being laid down. What we don't understand is that Dharma is meant for our best pleasure. The deepest meaning of Dharma in Sanskrit means the essence of, the eternal essence of you. Just like the essence of sugar is sweetness. Simply, what is the essence of the living entity? To answer that question, we have to know what the living entity is. If you identify as your body, well, there's no question of any eternal characteristic because the body is temporary. To understand what Dharma is, we have to understand that we are spirit soul wearing temporary bodies. And accepting that we're spirit soul, that means real pleasure is spiritual. Has nothing to do with matter. So the purpose of Dharma, in the sense of meaning law, is to guard you against the delusion of trying to enjoy matter and to keep you focused on the real pleasure of enjoying spirit. And to do all that, Krishna says, "I come." So what does it mean that there's a decline in religious practice? It just doesn't mean that people aren't, they're not believing in God anymore. No, that's not what we need to stand it. Decline of religious practice means people are not following the rules for getting superior pleasure. To correct that situation, Krishna comes. But we get things so twisted, we think that the very things that cause us so much problems, we think that's pleasure. To enjoy matter, to try and enjoy matter, we think that's pleasure. And any restrictions on that, we don't like. What happens when you have a child who's sick with a fever, and the child wants to eat anything and everything? You restrict. No, no, you can't do that. You had a child who had a fever, right? What aren't you supposed to eat if you have a fever? Now remember, there's some things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone remember? Anyway, suppose the child says, Mom, I gotta have that food. And you'll say, no. And the child will think that you are depriving him. But once again, you say you know better, right? So the things about Dharma as law that we don't like are actually things that are restricting our capacity to make a mess of ourselves. The whole purpose of Dharma as law is to provide you easy access to Dharma, meaning your eternal characteristic, your eternal nature. That you are spirit soul. Now, if you accept that you're spirit soul, some of you here accept that, yes? Yeah? Or maybe. Maybe? You accept that? Okay, now what does a spirit soul do? You float in the air like a ghost? What do? You just be spiritual, right? And you have spiritual friends and spiritual sports and all that stuff, right? Okay? Have spiritual discussions at cafes, right? This means no knowledge of Dharma. If we don't know what it is that spirit soul does, we don't know what is the original lifestyle of spirit soul, that means we'll never be attracted really to giving up material life, giving up the pursuit of matter for enjoyment, because we don't know what our real lifestyle is. That's the tragedy. So to correct that situation, Krishna comes to invigorate his part and parcels. The individual spirit souls, they are meant to have a relationship with the Supreme Soul. So Krishna comes to show that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be attracted to take up Dharma, because you think it's taking all the fun out of life. You can't do this, you can't do that. Just like a little kid who has a fever. Whoa, come on, I can't eat this, I can't run outside and play. Why not, why not? So Krishna comes, the Supreme comes to show you what the natural activities and relationships are for the spirit soul. And then you see, oh, that's higher pleasure. That's the real thing. Let me go for that. But unless the Supreme does that, we'll have no higher standard. And we'll really complain about giving up the lower standard. But I think that's enough for it. Any questions? If you can handle all this, you have no problems reading Bhagavad Gita. Anything objectionable? What do you think?
Me? I'm actually sort of really trying to get my head around the actual question of how can the Supreme come here. I'm failing to actually see the point of the question. I'm thinking maybe there isn't a point of the question. You just threw it in as something to discuss.
No, some people, you'd be surprised. Some people, they humbly say, if there's a Supreme, why should the Supreme come here? This is the world of matter. Temporary, limited by time and space. Why should the Supreme want to come here? A crude example is that the head of state can go into the prison. Doesn't mean he's a prisoner, but he can go, check the place out, and leave whenever he likes.
Yeah, but the question isn't that. The question is that he can the Supreme Court, not will the Supreme Court.
But that's the point. Some people say it's not possible.
So change that.
Can? Cannot.
Yeah.
Same thing. Some people say the Supreme cannot come here.
Yeah.
Here is here and there is there. God's up high and we're down low. That's the way it is.
No, sorry. No, earlier just now you just sort of said, well, why would he want to? I make you sort of say, that's not actually what the question is. It's not why we want to. It's like saying, can you come? Is it possible?
Either way, you take it whatever way.
No, that's what I'm sort of trying to understand. Is the question exact or is it just, you know, you just threw it in there?
You can, okay, you take it your way. Yeah, however you feel, you know.
Okay. So for me, it's like, you know, can the Supreme come here? It's almost like, well, that'd be ridiculous to even doubt. If there is a Supreme, obviously a Supreme can do whatever Supreme wants.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. But the problem is, people think that, well, this world is impure, why would the Supreme Pure come here? Then that means the Supreme Pure gets contaminated. But by the way, Gita explains that because everything is Krishna's energy, there's no question of Krishna being contaminated by his own energy, even if it's the material energy. Only we, because we are tiny, we get overwhelmed by the material energy, taking it as a place of enjoyment. But Krishna doesn't get illusioned by his own energy. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita. So if you can hang with all these points, then you'll have an exciting time reading Bhagavad Gita. See, it's nothing intimidating. And we do accept authority. We do accept the law being laid down in some aspects of our life. And we do acknowledge that you have to know the wider picture before you can act intelligently. And we do accept that you should submit to higher knowledge, higher awareness. Just like she would tell the 5-year-old boy, you gotta go to school, I see the whole picture, you don't. That's all Krishna is doing in Bhagavad Gita. He's presenting his qualifications, why he sees the whole picture, and giving you the process to verify that. So in the process of getting to know all those things, you'll have an exciting read. Alright.
At some point we have to make a personal choice then, don't we? So the choice then comes out, isn't it?
There's always personal choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
At some point we have to make the choice, which is, do I believe what I'm reading? And that is the implicit choice right from...
Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita will Krishna ask you, do you believe what you're reading?
No. But you have... No. He doesn't have to ask a question. This is like... to read it, okay, you have to... I'm not saying it's not right, by the way. I'm not disagreeing with it. What I'm saying is that... At some point, we have to make the decision, as all humans, do I accept what I'm reading?
But how can we make that decision... Unless we actually we take up a process, we go into the laboratory to verify.
That's part of the reading of it, isn't it? It's like a guidebook.
A guidebook on not how to believe, but how to act.
Yes.
So you will see the result, not just a guidebook to believe.
Yeah.
It's not a catalog of beliefs. It's a manual for how to act so that you will experience the result.
Yeah.